Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about Season 6, Episode 5, titled Negro y Azul. We'll get to that later. Black and Blue. Black and Blue.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a little teaser for all the people in the know. They're like, I know what they're going to talk about. Alexis, what'd you think of this episode?
Even with the Lalo drop at the end, this still felt like very much a setup episode for me.
Yeah.
Actually, on the Insider podcast, the Villa Gang was briefly discussing walking the line of leaving viewers hungry, but not so hungry that they have a headache. And I feel like this episode just barely pushed me into headache territory. I am so ready for something to happen.
Yeah.
You better deliver on these promises.
And we had some people write in to say, like, oh, I actually like the episode. You know, a setup episode can still be interesting, and it still had the, you know, the scam was happening. I enjoy that part of it. But, like, yes, two episodes in a row now have felt like, okay, they're getting to something, but we're not sure what. And we're sort of like Howard in a old folks home trying to get these people to hold on a little bit longer, just tapping our foot, waiting. Okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I'm with you. I was like, not underwhelmed. Like, I think it's still quality television. It's just like very slowly maneuvering pieces into place. And there are some scenes that I think are just straight up unnecessary. Like, how much more paranoid can you get than digging a tunnel underground to your neighbor's house and living there while having a body double live in your own house?
Right.
Do I really not know that Gus is being paranoid? Do I need to see him, like, have a Spidey sense freak out and go into the parking lot of Los Pollos? No, I know what's going through his head. So some of the scenes seem a little gratuitous from that angle. Just like, we already know this. Why are you showing us more of it? But for the most part, yeah, I didn't dislike the episode. It's just, I'm with you. I'm just tapping my foot. Like, when are we going to get to something that is exciting and interesting? And it sounds like it's close.
We only have, what, one more episode?
Two more in this chunk.
Okay.
Yeah. And then another six coming up in like later this year.
Yeah. I am so ready for something to happen.
Yeah.
There were a couple of good connections that were made this episode for sure. Howard finally clicking in his head that Jimmy's onto him again.
After the second set of prostitutes.
Yes.
Prostitute me once, shame on me. Prostitute me twice, yeah.
I'm coming after your ass.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know. We'll see. I'm preparing for a big one next week because with what Kim says later, when they're lying in bed, she's just like, you know why you've played into Howard's game, right? Because you know what's coming next.
And I want to know what's coming. I want to know. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. You ready to get into the recap?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on a series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
The teaser for this episode is the construction of what appears to be a memorial. What would you call that? It's not a
plaque. It's like a...
Yeah.
It's a
lucite block.
Hunk of resin, yeah.
Yeah, a lucite block.
Mm-hmm. With a protractor in it? Is that mm-hmm. what that's called?
I don't know. So whenever I think protractor, I always think the half moon shape thing.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that something else? Oh, God.
This is a slide rule.
I am not an
slide
engineer.
Slide rule?
A slide rule?
I don't know. It looks like it slides. There are probably some architects or engineers out there who can
write in and say what this is. No, it's fine. We don't need any more information. Do you know that this was shot in the same space as the boxing scene and at the same time?
That's wild.
They look
wild.
So different.
Yeah.
There was literally a professional lucite pourer doing this okay. on one side while one of the cousins is directing the fight on the other side. That's another little Easter egg.
Yeah, that's cool. I saw a photo of the group on set there, and I noticed, I think it's Luis
Moncada, yeah.
was mm-hmm. one of the guys there, and I'm like, oh, he must have done some of the work with him.
He did.
I saw Howard Hamlin's body double, which I'm not even sure why they needed a body double.
Could I say that Saul Goodman as Hamlin looks a lot more like Hamlin than the body double did.
Yeah, but you put a helmet on him, you don't really need him to look like him.
It's fair.
His arms are toner.
But just gotta have that blonde hair poking out.
Yeah. So I don't know how I feel about these. You know, you've heard me talk about cold opens that aren't super relevant. I think this one is, though. This one is important at the very end with Lalo and connecting the dots between him and Gus and the super lab and everything like mm-hmm. that. So we'll talk about that more when we get there. So I didn't have too much of a problem with this one.
Yeah.
And it felt sort of like a cook, right? From Breaking Bad.
It where did. You have it had definitely that element to
Walt
it.
Walt and Jesse just like in the super lab pouring stuff mm-hmm. and heating stuff and scrubbing down vats and all that. And yeah. And by the end of it, I was like, okay, that was at least pretty relevant.
Thematically and visually, yeah. It was less
physically.
Poetic and more practical.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Totally. Before we move on, I want to talk about the laser etching, I guess is what you would call it here.
Mm-hmm.
In Lieb Dein U Jungs. Jungs? Jungs. I don't know how you say it. Look, I'm not German. You want to try and take this one away?
Show it to me. No, that's fine.
What that means is, with love, your boys.
Hmm.
And so this was obviously made, I think posthumously, most likely made by, you know, Kai and all those guys who were working with him and sent to him. And there's a sticker on the side that says Volkers, which is the company, I guess, that made it,
mm-hmm.
Which will become important later.
That
but
will.
Just know
it's a link.
That means with love, your boys.
With love. That makes more sense. I saw Liebe and I thought Life for some reason, but with Love Your Boys. Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the show theme, and then the episode starts with Kim laying awake in bed. She is worried about Lalo.
I'm worried
that she's not telling anybody else about.
Yeah, stacking chairs against the door and all sorts of stuff. I'm more worried about how much light is coming in through these windows. Like, I know this is movie magic stuff, and you need to, like, see the image on screen, but holy cow, these lights outside are just full daylight, as best I can tell.
It's a very safe parking lot. Very safe. Yeah. So safe.
It's crazy. Also, when Kim gets out of bed and, you know, presses a chair against the doorknob, and Jimmy gets up and sees it all, and he asks her, like, oh, you can't sleep either? And she's like, yeah, I'm awake. I figured I'd get a jump on work, which is not really possible in Kim's state. This tells you a little bit about where Kim's at, I think, because, like, she can't sleep, and when she's not sleeping, she's working or scheming with Jimmy. There's just, like, a lot like when she was trying to do the Gatwood Oil and Mesa Verde cases at the same time. She's just running herself ragged. I feel like she's doing the same here, because you can't get a jump on public defender cases. There are so many of them in the system. She could say, oh, I just wanted to get a jump on work for the next 100 years and never get through them all. So,
right.
Like, she's, I don't know, she's pushing herself pretty hard. And I don't know if that's stress response for her, where she gets stressed out and then wants to take on more. Because it's some kind of, like, out of sick cycle where she perversely is comforted by just working. And the more work she can do, the better she feels temporarily.
Well, that's the thing. Whenever you're doing the work that you've been assigned one way or another, you really feel like, I'm doing the right thing in this moment.
Yeah.
And so everything's okay. Everything else is fine because I'm in this moment doing exactly the right thing.
It's a distraction from the things you know you're not doing right.
Yeah. That's how I feel every time I do jewelry. Like, yes, I'm doing the right thing right this moment. None of the other moments, but right this moment.
Yeah.
By the end of the scene, Kim once again has chosen not to say anything to Jimmy about Lalo. Hope that's not going to bite her in the ass immediately the next episode.
Yeah, I feel like what Mike told her about, like, you being made of certain stuff has really sunk in. Like, when she goes and she takes the chair off the door, it's like her saying, I've decided to be strong for Jimmy. You know, because Jimmy's worried too. He says, I'm glad I'm not the only one. And yeah, then she takes it. Because she just put it on there, right? And if Jimmy didn't come out, she would have left it on there.
For sure.
And it's not that he noticed it, because she didn't freak out that he noticed. It's just, yeah, I think she is saying here with her body language and her actions, I'm going to try and be strong for both of us, which is also rough because she's taking on a lot.
She is taking on a lot. It's noble. It's also dishonest in a relationship, but also I get it.
Yeah.
So for the next scene, we are going to cut to Gus at his Los Pollos office once again, finally, where he can't sit still.
And his spidey sense goes off, and he goes to the parking lot, and nothing's out there.
Yeah.
The other most important character in this scene is Lyle. Lyle's back.
Course.
He's still hanging in there at the chicken joint. Do you think he's going to make it out? No one talks about whether or not Lyle's going to make it out of this show alive.
Did we ever see Lyle in Breaking Bad?
I don't think so. I think he's a whole new creation for Better Call Saul.
Well, I will say there is a pretty high turnover in fast food, so that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Except for Lyle. He's been there the whole time.
It's fair. I don't know. Maybe Lyle beefs it.
Maybe.
He gets beefed.
I'm more interested in whether he'll make it out than whether Gus will, because we know Gus's fate.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. Naturally.
Oh, speaking of Gus, he's looking older, isn't he? I don't want to disparage Giancarlo. We all get there, hopefully, if we're lucky. But boy, I bet you go back to season 3 of Breaking Bad when we first meet Gus, and you look at him compared to the Gus of now. There's no way that image holds up. No way.
he definitely seems to be a little bit more upright, less puffy in Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Bless him.
Yeah.
But that is the cruel forward march of time.
And we've seen his body armor that he's wearing, because you could chalk it up too. To Kevlar vest or something, but body armor he's wearing is very thin. Very thin. And he is not.
It's true. Too many Spice Girls.
They are the specialty.
Delicious Spice Girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a lot more to say about that one.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Next, we are going to join Cliff, Howard, and Aaron at a meeting with the Sandpiper residents, where they're trying to convince everyone to hold out. And afterward, Cliff confronts Howard, finally.
Yeah.
Juicy.
I was waiting for this moment. This is kind of exciting. And I love how it's played. I think, like, showing Howard being good at his job right before you have Cliff confront him over the things he's seen is smart. And I think Cliff notices that he's pretty good at what he's doing, right?
There are a lot of expressions that cross his face as he is listening to this impassioned speech that Howard gives to the residents, for sure.
Yeah. But also Howard's tapping his foot like a maniac. Like, yeah. Cliff notices that. Which we know it's not drugs. So what is going on with Howard? What's on his mind? Does he, in the back of his mind, is he thinking, oh, Jimmy's out there doing something? Or is he worried about some other case or something we're just not privy to?
Could just be watching Aaron Brill and thinking, oh, wow, you sound like you're delivering some copy right now. This is not inspiring.
Could be. Could be. Or he's got like somewhere to go, or he's got to go to the bathroom. Who knows?
He's got a tinkle.
Yeah.
During the while Cliff is confronting him, he brings up his son once again.
Yep.
He's like, this is the same stuff my son used to always spout at me. So interesting that they brought in that angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives Cliff a good reason to be on high alert, I guess. And I just love the way this half of the scene starts with, like, Howard, I threw a woman out of my car in the middle of the street.
Yeah, he is rightfully incredulous, because if you know that you haven't done something so crazy, how are you going to take that? You're just going to stare at them blankly and say, so this is what I did?
And that's the genius of Kim and Jimmy's plan, is like, you can't refute it, right? Because Howard knows that he didn't do it. Cliff knows what he saw.
Yeah.
Like, I saw your car with your vanity plate on it.
They're both completely certain, but their actions, Kim and Jimmy's actions, have thrown doubt on the whole situation, and that is their whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just to throw doubt.
And then he cancels his whole week, which I find hilarious.
On a dime, on a whim. Mm-hmm. Can you even do that as a lawyer?
It's good to be the boss.
I guess so. Gosh.
Yeah. I love the way the scene ends, too. It's got a close-up shot of his namaste license plate as he backs up. and namaste is like, it doesn't quite mean peace, but it's like a greeting that's showing deference to somebody else or whatever. It's meant to show respect, something like that. And he's about to go to war, right? Like, backing that right up into the camera and showing, like, ironically, namaste is very good, I thought.
Yeah, that's a good, whatever you call it, whenever two unsimilar things come together.
Juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition, yes. I did the thing with my hands that was like, you know me so well. Good job. Are we ready to meet Francesca?
Yes, please.
All right, Francesca's back. Mm-hmm. Next, we follow Francesca for her first day of work at Jimmy's new office, where she quickly tries to nope out.
Unsuccessfully. She tries to nope. She gets roped.
With money.
Yep.
Always.
Yeah, that's how it starts.
Yep.
Greedy. Greedy Francesca, which they're a match made in heaven.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know if this is necessarily better than working at the DMV, but I guess if it pays better, that's all that matters.
This office, I use that term as loosely as possible.
This dank toilet box.
Right? It's got the toilet, and I understand, okay, that's just garbaggio.
Garbaggio.
As he says. But where's the actual toilet? Like, this place has a real toilet I can use, right? It should be her first question. Because I see it and it's an empty box. Where do you expect me to go to the bathroom?
She's going to have to go to the Chinese restaurant next door, probably.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to hate them.
They are going to hate them.
Always coming in, never buying anything, stinking up the bathroom.
Stinking up the joint, probably doing coke off of the counter or whatever.
Probably.
It's dirty scumbags.
The one thing that, aside from, you know, money that she's able to get from this exchange, is a say in the decorating.
Good.
I don't know if I believe that. Okay, there are two possibilities here, right? That she does get a say in the decorating and that she's responsible for this Halls of Justice motif.
Unlikely.
As much as, like, Kim is.
Deeply unlikely.
Or Saul just eventually, you know, overrules her.
I don't remember what her reception area looked like.
I don't either.
That's the problem. Yeah. So maybe she had to say in that part.
Yeah. And I remember, I do specifically remember Walt walking into Saul's office, like not the lobby area, but his office, and just like rolling his eyes, like can't believe what he's seeing. So it must just be, yeah, the lobby is pretty normal, but the office. Okay. So she didn't totally give in. Although I could see her getting overruled a lot because she's very bitter in Breaking Bad is the other
thing. She is very bitter. That's true.
Like, she's not this Francesca.
Mm-hmm. The light has gone from her eyes at that point.
Yeah. And I'm sure dealing with, you know, the clientele that Saul's going to have going forward, as opposed to the elder law stuff she did before, is probably part of that.
The folksy phone calls.
Right.
The talking about Cracker Barrel.
The weather. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, she's got a long way to go on her journey.
There's one thing that this scene gave us that I'm very appreciative of, and it is that beautiful Colonel Sanders line that I mentioned in an earlier episode.
Well, Colonel Sanders is to chicken, Saul Goodman is to the law.
Yes, perfect. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And next we are with Kim as she meets with her former paralegal Viola, who seems happy to see her and gasses her up.
Yeah, what was this meeting about? Is she trying to get her back? She was said she was just apologizing. I guess it could be just
she
that.
Did, but she was brainstorming, spitballing. I think it was with Jimmy before in a previous episode, and she was kind of listing like all of her favorite people from all the various offices that she's worked in during the span of Better Call Saul. And I think this is her way of like feeling Viola out. She's beginning to build her pro bono team.
Okay. Here's a more sinister option.
Oh.
She's trying to rope Viola into the Howard scam.
Hmm.
Probably unknowingly.
Hmm.
Like, I don't think she would intentionally join up with that, but yeah. Maybe she's trying to bring her in. There's some angle they need Schweikert and Coakley member for.
That's fair. That is a more sinister reading of the situation.
I know, but you're right. At some point, she does have to start building out her legal team if we believe that she actually wants to do the pro bono stuff. And I think she does.
Mm-hmm. She definitely does. That's like her... That is her end that justifies all these dirty means at this point.
So you're probably right. That's what she's doing. But who knows with these two?
All I know is that Viola is friggin' adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Could watch her a lot.
She's being inspired by Kim. I mean, that's, you know, that's one good side effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if, I don't know, because you'd almost have to have Kim get out with her reputation intact for that to continue to inspire people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll just feel betrayed.
Yep. We're going to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. So after this scene, here we go. After this scene, we're with Jimmy at a boxing gym to meet with a client who turns out to be Howard. He says he wants to punch it out.
Mr. Ward. Mr. H. Ward. Love it.
That was clever.
Yeah, I did enjoy this quite a bit. The fighting was pretty pathetic, but some of those blows, they made them really land.
They did.
But nobody was defending. It was a hilarious, ridiculous fight.
It was pretty ridiculous. Jimmy, it was like... being a goof at the beginning of it, because obviously none of this means shit all to him. He doesn't care. This isn't going to change his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think Howard's right. It didn't change anything, but It might have just been for Howard to feel better,
honestly.
That's
what I was thinking. By the end of the second watch, I was like, you know, maybe he just wanted to deck his halls.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't really look like Howard had been training forever, so it's not like this was premeditated, like, oh, I'm so good at boxing.
Yeah.
I'm really going to whip his ass. It was more like...
one of these people works out and the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
Canonically.
Pretty much.
In real life, they both work out quite a bit, but...
Uh-huh.
In the universe, in situ, I don't think we have any reason to think that Jimmy has been working out in any way.
No.
Just his mouth. Just his mouth.
I mean, honestly, in scenes like this with Bob Odenkirk's heart scare last year, I'm more thinking about like, oh man, don't make this guy do too much strenuous activity.
Well, I know
he's recovered and everything.
He did Mr. Nobody too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or Nobody?
I think it's just Nobody.
Frick. Okay.
Yeah, he did that. But I don't know. I watch these scenes like a little bit through my fingers because I don't want to see anything bad happen to Bob Odenkirk.
It's fair. I guess I didn't associate boxing with initiating a heart attack, but I guess that...
Oh, just increased heart rate in general.
Yeah, that's fair.
Stress in your heart. I just worry.
Well, maybe you shouldn't be acting then. That seems stressful.
Yeah, can be.
Having a camera on you? Ugh, barf.
I came up with a hilarious pun.
Lay it on me.
For Howard. Mm-hmm. At the end of this, he's decided no more Mr. Namaste. Okay, it was bad. Sorry.
I will need that in the form of a song, please.
Nope. All right, moving on. No, I do have one other thing that is maybe more interesting and relevant here. So when he's, you know, talking to Jimmy, trying to goad him into like fighting him, he's talking about like what Jimmy's doing. Mm-hmm. I know you're behind all this, and this is, you were sloppy. It's not like you. And this is like psychology 101. He says, you're trying to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
How accurate do you think that is?
Incredibly accurate.
Think so?
I mean, he used strippers twice.
Yeah.
As we mentioned before. And he had to know that Cliff was going to confront Howard. Mm-hmm. And Howard is going to be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, I think it was super risky, like I talked about a few episodes ago, to go mm-hmm. to the country club and get his face seen there.
That's why it feels like it is intentional.
Yeah.
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 But to what end? I don't freaking know. Don't know
I
yet.
Don't know. It could just be, you know, one of those things where he feels like he deserves to be punished.
Maybe.
For stuff he's doing.
Or maybe they're hoping for some counter defamation thing. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
We know that Howard has a PI watching Jimmy.
Yes. Now he does.
Not as intimidating of a bald man as Mike is, but as far as private eyes go. He looks like Christopher Kimball from Milk Street. Took the bow tie off of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which does not ring intimidation bells in my mind.
Does not. Sounds like he's about to tell me a better way to cook my eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
my onions.
The thing about this show, so I so often see in comedies, which this show is not a comedy, I so often see private eyes being portrayed as incompetent mm-hmm. and buffoons, and I think about like half the private eyes I've seen, especially in comedies, are that way. This show never does that. This show, whenever they have a PI or a cop or something on, they're always competent. Mm-hmm. They're always like able to do their jobs and never like easily fooled.
Yeah,
which I think is a strength for this show. So I'm actually taking this guy seriously as opposed to some other comedy where I would just be like, well, I can't wait to see how Jimmy bamboozles this guy.
Right. No, I think this is serious, and I think they better watch themselves moving forward as if they weren't already.
You think he'll notice that someone's following him? I could see Jimmy noticing that someone is following him, just like Kim did, right?
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, it's Lalo's guy. Mm. And then maybe like, I don't know what that spurs in Jimmy, but I could also see this PI figuring out more about Jimmy's life than Howard expected him to. Like, mm-hmm. oh, he is working with Lalo and here's the trouble he's in.
Yeah.
And all that.
I saw a really interesting theory on Twitter, which was Gus's guys will know that Jimmy and Kim are being followed by another set of guys.
Yeah.
And how is that going to work? That's what I want to know. How's that going to, are they going to be cool?
I don't know. So Michael probably checked them out, right?
Yeah.
Check out Howard's guys and probably realize, oh, this is a PI. I don't know. If Mike is doing his job, it shouldn't escalate, but we'll see.
But that's the thing. Like you were saying, what if that PI discovers
the
a little bit
followed,
more? Yeah, a little bit more. More of the cartel stuff.
Right. I don't know how good he is, but if he investigates the people following Kim, that's going to lead to Gus, perhaps.
Right. And Gus is paranoid as hell right now.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Who knows?
Very worried for several groups of people. After this beautiful boxing match, we are back with Kim smoking on the balcony as Jimmy gets home with a brand new shiner.
Mm-hmm. And then she starts sitting on the toilet. I don't know what's with toilets this episode, but there's
thrones.
Two of them.
They're all thrones.
Thrones, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's the golden toilet. It's a whole season of toilets. This show's really gone down the toilet, let me tell you.
It's a Game of Thrones. It's a show of thrones.
Another show that went down the toilet.
Oh. Hey,
literally. Yeah.
Now relitigate. Ugh, no thanks. This is also, speaking of Kim sitting on the toilets, where she drops that iconic, I'll fight for you line.
Yeah.
Which makes its way into all of his advertising in the future.
Oh, yeah. She's shaping Saul Goodman.
She really
like
is.
Like I said, almost as much, if not more, than Jimmy is at this point.
Totally.
And we get a glimpse of, like, the next stage of their plan, right? So Kim's got this magazine or this paper or something announcing that three judges are being given a prestigious award. One of them is Rand Casimiro, I think is how you'd say that, a retired U.S. district judge. And when Jimmy sees him and Kim says, I found a photo of him, Jimmy sees him and he's like, okay, good. He's got a mustache. It's a lot less face to worry about, which to me says he's doing another
dress
Howard,
up.
Yeah, doing Howard face. This time he's going to do judge face and look like this guy.
I think you might be right. Boy, that's even more dangerous.
To what end?
To what end?
Yeah, that's my biggest question. Like, I believe he can pull it off, but to what end?
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. How is this going to intersect with Howard? I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know, but I desperately want to know. Can't fucking wait.
And I think it's going to be big, right? This is the line I talked about where they're laying in bed and she says, you know, you fell into Howard's game here, played his game because you know what's coming next.
Right.
And that to me says something big, something egregious. The thing that I was hoping they would do, which is go too far with something. Could be next episode. We'll see.
Could be. I swan to John if the next episode is another setup episode. Could eat my pillow and cry.
I don't think it will be.
Ugh. Okay. Next, we are at Gus's mini suburban compound where we find out Mike's been taking the back way in.
Yeah.
Gus is acting more OCD than usual and decides to take everyone on a field trip to the super lab hole.
Right. We get a garage door camera, which is pretty cool.
That this is cool.
A Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul kind of staple.
Yeah.
It's just
cameras in weird places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mike's hiding in there, and then Gus goes inside, and Gus is scrubbing away at the bathroom
with a toothbrush.
If he was scrubbing the toilet, I would have really said something was up, but he's not. It's just the grout in the bathtub. This is what he does, right? Just like the fryer incident with Lyle, where Lyle cleaned it like four times, and you know, put his blood, sweat, and tears into it, and Gus comes up and is like, "It's adequate. Go home."
And then continue scrubbing it.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
No, definitely. It seems like his OCD gets way worse when he's stressed out.
Absolutely.
Which is fairly accurate from what I've read.
And Mike's trying to calm him down. He's like, okay, it's a waiting game. Sooner or later, Lalo has to end up right here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got this covered. But I don't know that that's true, especially with what we've seen, what we now know of Lalo's plan.
Yeah.
And I think we know pretty much all of it at this point. They've kind of gave away that game. We'll talk about it there. But I think if he goes over Gus's head, to Juan Bolsa, to even Don Eladio, he could both get permission and probably help to take out Gus. I think Gus would be just like immediately cut off. Of course, that all doesn't happen or doesn't matter. In Breaking Bad, we know where we pick up there. But like, I'm not sure Mike has all the angles. Just like we didn't know where the hell Lala was.
Never would have guessed. Mike doesn't. Never would have guessed where he ends up.
No, not at all.
Yeah. It makes sense now in retrospect.
Yeah, totally. That's what I love about this show. And Breaking Bad did this all the time too, is it's hiding in plain sight. It's super obvious. If you just can get your brain onto that path, it follows. There's a light at the end of that tunnel.
Absolutely.
That's not the metaphor I want, but you know what I mean. Those dots connect.
Yeah. So it really does seem like, especially with, so when Gus is in the super lab hole, he's walking paces across the length of the hole, like trying to remember how far it is. He is hiding his tiny, worthless ankle gun in the treads of the excavator. God. I think they're setting up a final confrontation here, definitely, between Gus and Lalo in the in the super lab hole.
That's my guess. And this is exactly where the path that Lalo's following, those breadcrumbs, is going to lead to this hole. And if Lalo decides to go at Gus himself, then, which he probably will, because
it's very Lalo.
He's that kind of guy.
Yep.
It'll lead here. I get the feeling that what Gus is doing is, he's also, if you notice, fiddling with the power cable and a connection there.
Yeah.
I think what he's doing is, you know, seeing what it takes to turn those lights off. Like, could he just pull this thing, stand up, and in pitch black, walk over to his gun?
Yeah.
And then he would know exactly where that thing is. So if the guy were, if whoever came after him, probably Lalo, were to turn the lights back on somehow, he would have the drop on him, right? Because he'd be in a different place with a weapon, knowing pretty much where that person would be. Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely setting up a dark subterranean kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And I expect it won't go down exactly like they're setting it up to go down.
It shouldn't, if it's any good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there'll be a complication.
I can't wait. Can't wait to see what it is. I have decided, I don't know what it is, every time I see this friggin' super lab hole, my desire to watch Breaking Bad again just increases. And I've decided officially, between the breaks in this season, I am going to watch Breaking Bad again. It's going to happen.
I've seen it like 3 or 4 times now, so I'll join you for some of it, but I have other TV to watch.
Ozymandias, yeah.
Yeah, sure. All the good episodes. I mean, they're all good.
They're all good is the problem. Maybe the first half of the first season.
Crawlspace. I'll definitely join you for Crawlspace. Awesome.
Skip a few episodes and then, Crawlspace. Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like maybe my favorite episode, or at least favorite moment of the series. The end of that.
Yeah.
The other thing is about the Super Lab is I sort of expected it to be built and maybe Gale running it by the end of the series, but it is not even close, and work isn't progressing at all. Like, his guys are gone.
Yeah.
Nothing's happening on it. So I don't think in the next 9 episodes or 8 episodes, we're going to get to the completion of the Super Lab.
So here's my intuition about the pacing of this final season. I think that the Lalo stuff is going to be wrapped up before the break. And I think the rest is going to be the fall of Jimmy and Kim and Howard collectively, probably.
Think it's going to jump forward at all? Because Breaking Bad did that.
Maybe.
I don't know
that it needs to, though, is the thing.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It doesn't need to. It's going to jump forward probably when we see Gene, because that's unresolved, right?
Yeah, of
course. That has to be resolved.
Uh-huh. And we left him in a very specific place where he has decided to take action.
Yeah, he's doing what Howard did this episode.
So I'll take care of it myself. Click.
Maybe he's going to try and box somebody. I doubt it.
He's going to try to box Cutter somebody.
Yep. My prediction for the end of this series, or the end of Lalo specifically, I think Lalo's going to be buried underneath the super lab. I think he's going to kill Lalo in the super lab and bury his body and then just concrete that thing in. and we'll know the entire time now watching Breaking Bad that Lalo's body is under that lab the whole time.
Bones. Lalo's bones.
Yeah.
Oh, grim. That's metal. It's metal
sure
AF.
Is.
I like it. I think you,
yeah, we'll see.
I think you might be right.
I just saw another show, another Breaking Bad like do that. Ozark did that pretty recently.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, buried somebody in a place. I won't give any spoilers.
Significant place, yeah.
Yeah, good. It was very cool.
Grim. For the final sequence of this episode, Lalo.
Yep.
Finally, we find ourselves in Germany, of all places, where Lalo has contrived to meet Ziegler's widow, Margareta.
You know, Germany, south of the border. Where we all expected him to go.
I mean, everywhere south of somewhere, right?
It's true. This was wild. I did not see this coming at
I didn't
all.
Either, and then I felt like a fool for not seeing it coming, because obviously this is the only other lead he has.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't know that Nacho's dead.
It doesn't matter. He's not concerned about Nacho at this point. He's concerned about Gus. And yes, this is the thing that leads him back to Gus. And crucially, I think the thing that gives him permission to go after Gus, because he's still on that Don Eladio Bolsa leash.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was an attempt on his life, they can't prove that it was Gus.
Right.
So they're probably not going to give the okay to kill off their number one moneymaker.
At least not for that. But if they learn that he was doing shit under their noses the whole time.
Exactly. That he's planning to cut them out, they will kill him in a second.
Oh, yes. So, very smart on his part.
It just totally makes sense. And I didn't see it coming. I didn't see anybody else mention it. Nobody wrote in and said, hey, I think this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I saw a couple people after the fact claiming it on like r/ Better Call Saul. Like,
easy
oh, I
to
knew
do
this.
After
and
the
posting
fact.
Twitter
yeah.
shots of their tweets and stuff. But like, I didn't see it being talked about in a serious way.
Yeah.
Which is shocking because it's so obvious in retrospect.
And it really is. It's literally, I repeat myself, the only other lead he had. And he's Lalo. Why would he not just get on a plane and go to Germany?
Yeah.
A mad lad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild.
It is wild. What's also wild is him trying to Lothario his way into getting information from Margareta.
What is that reference? I don't know it.
Lothario? Oh, just like being very romantic.
Oh,
trying to woo his way into some information.
Yeah.
If she had invited him in, I don't know that he would have turned her down.
Yeah. No, I mean, and he's very good at it. He's very charming.
He's very charming.
Very good looking. It's,
obviously. Dalton, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised because I don't feel like much time has passed and she seems like she's just moved on, man.
Maybe Germans are built different. I don't know. Maybe when you're that age,
don't have time to waste.
It feels different, yeah.
Yeah. And she definitely hasn't moved on, right? She talks about him and she's
she's still very much
hesitant. She doesn't press the issue. She's like, yeah, maybe another life, that kind of thing. I like how Lalo, he's so smooth, and not just because he's charismatic and charming, but like the way he starts a conversation here, because he walks up and starts talking about this place that he knows she would know because that's where she was going to meet Werner for their hot springs getaway when he was, you know, when he escaped Gus's operation. So he's just dropping these hints and like enticing her to start the conversation with him, which you can see that she's that kind of person too, right? The scene starts off with her eavesdropping on these two kids playing a video game, like a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire
arcade game
clone.
Yeah.
And so she's already like listening to other people's conversations and butting into them a little bit.
Very friendly, very personable, which makes sense because Werner was very much like that.
Oh yeah, totally. Every time he went to a bar, he ended up chatting up the whole place.
Yes. For better or worse. Yeah.
So I saw some people also wonder why, how he knew this information, how he knew to go to Marguerite. And he got her information back in season 4, I think, when he got the travel wire stuff.
Yeah.
And he burnt down that place. And then he called Werner at the hot springs that they were going to meet at.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew what city they were planning on going to and like what they were going to do with the hot springs and all that stuff. So,
and he had her name. So
yeah,
it's not like he couldn't have.
And an address from where the money order came from, or the wire came from.
Yeah. He had literally everything he needed.
Yep. Totally. It tracks.
We're going to talk about Werner's fiery wiener.
Yeah, it's a wire-haired wiener dog, which I'm officially going to call a Werner dog. Werner. I don't know. Yeah, this thing is hideous. It's already a gross
shape.
You
and your hatred of wiry-haired dogs. Wire-haired
animals.
Why?
They're the worst.
They look like little ragamuffins.
Yeah, they're so raggedy.
How does that not just like immediately get your sympathy juices flowing?
I don't know. Maybe I don't have a sympathetic heart, but I do have aesthetic tastes, and they're not aligned with the wire-haired animal.
I thought Little Bear was very cute.
Sure. Sure.
But I love all animals.
I love when they walk up to the house and she invites him in, and you can hear the dog barking in the background, and you can see Lalo noting that there's a dog. Even before mm-hmm. she says, like, that's Little Bear, he, like, hears the barking and looks up at it, like, very subtly. It's it's a super subtle thing that Tony Dalton is doing, and it's great.
I didn't even notice that. Good catch.
I also love how he waits all night outside for her to go inside, go to bed, sleep all night, wake up in the morning. I don't know how late they're out, so maybe it's like 4 a.m. or something and he only has to wait a few hours, but he's out there all night, and I just love, like, I wish my life was like that, where I could I had a mission, I could focus on the one thing and do it to the exclusion of everything else, and that didn't matter, that wouldn't like fuck up everything in my life. But that's just not the life I live. It must be such a wonderful, easy life to live.
Oh yeah, so it's very freeing to have a vendetta.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And a vendetta and nothing to go back to, nothing really to. Like yeah. No money concerns.
Sure. It's a very short period of time where you can enjoy that, I imagine.
True. Seems nice though. and then there's the thing. Hey, life is complicated. Most people's lives are more complicated than this, and I admire the simplicity of his life.
Fair.
And I know he's a drug dealer. His life is not simple, but in this instance, it was. Here's the thing. Here's the lucite or resin piece that's engraved with love your boys. So you might wonder, like, how he knows this is significant in any way. There's another very subtle thing they do in the episode. Earlier on that night, they were talking about, like, his men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, essentially, Dina Jung's, whatever, however you say it, except she uses, instead of your boys, she says, like, German for his boys.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears that word Jungs or Jungs, I don't fucking know. And he is able to recognize that as the same word that she was using when she talked about his boys. Mm-hmm. So he knows it's connected to them.
Gotcha.
And so when he looks at it, he sees like the logo on the bottom from the company that made it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be where he's going next, right? To find out who commissioned this thing.
Everyone on the Insider podcast basically said so. Yes.
Yeah.
That is.
It's the
that
only
is
thing
the
that
case.
Makes sense.
Yeah. This is the arrow.
This place, Volkers.
Yep.
Or Volkers. If you're German.
It starts with a W. Does it start with a W or a V?
V?
Then I have no idea.
Yeah, it's probably Volkers. Anyway, so yeah, that's a connection, and that's where he's going next, I assume.
He manages to get out because he's Lalo. So he just
right.
So he just hops out of a second floor window.
Yep.
Like it's nothing. And Margarita closes it, and that's the end of the episode.
It's not even like a second floor window that's like a normal window. It's one of those up high windows.
Yeah, so it's like a half window.
It's like
window.
In a basement or something,
right.
Except, you know, it opens. This is a half window that's very high, so he's got to climb up.
He's got to shimmy out of that thing.
Yeah, he's a madman.
He is a madman. His hair's looking good in this episode, too.
Sure.
Very different.
Yeah, it's longer. Let's talk about Black and Blue for a second.
Let's do it.
The name of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Negro Yetzul at the beginning of this episode.
That sounds very familiar
to me. Which also means Black and Blue.
Yes.
That is the episode. That is the name of an episode of Breaking Bad.
I thought it was, yeah.
And, you know, they've said, hey, the return of Walt and Jesse is coming. It makes me wonder if it's coming next episode, because Negro Yetzul is the episode right before Better Call Saul, the episode Better Call Saul, where we meet Saul Goodman for the first time.
Wow.
So this could be a reference to that being right before it. And then, you know, this is the episode right before Walt and Jesse come back into Better Call Saul.
That would be pretty exciting. That'd be a pretty good half season finale.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So next episode, maybe we get Walt and Jesse in there. We get a big Howard event. And then they do that in Breaking Bad a lot, where the second to last episode is one of the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get kind of a lead out into the next season.
Right.
With the finale episode. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking, is maybe next week will be the Walt and Jesse week.
I did watch the teaser for the next episode. I won't say anything about it because I know how you feel about the teaser. You're yelling for me to turn the episode off.
Yeah.
So, just know, dear people, that I have seen it.
Ooh.
And that I know a little bit of something.
Ho, ho, ho. Okay.
Ho, ho, ho.
Well, I think that's it for the episode, unless you got more to say.
I don't. I've said my piece.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, well, let's move on to feedback.
Let's do it.
If you'd like to send in some feedback, you can do so at bcs@baldmove.com. Thank you to everybody who did send in feedback. And again, we got a ton of it. So I apologize to anybody whose feedback I can't read because for time or content or whatever, I had to cut it for vulgarities. Most of it. Yeah.
Wow.
You wouldn't believe the things our audience writes.
Filthy. All right.
All right, let's start off with some stuff from last week and a little minor correction here from Marcus.
Oh.
It says, I think you were using the term fridging incorrectly in your season 6 episode 4 recap episode. Fridging refers to using the death of a woman as a motivation for a man's actions. It sounded like you were using fridging R.E. Kim and Lalo to mean putting a character on ice, like taking a piece off the board when you were speculating if they were still around during Breaking Bad times. Yeah, I think you're right. That's certainly how I meant it in the wrong way.
I do believe that since the birth of that term, the definition has expanded somewhat.
Oh, sure. That happens all the time.
But yes, the base definition involves death.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I really didn't know. I will be upfront. I'm a little ignorant about that, but that's how I was using it. All right, Omar says, I just had a thought about how Kim's tragic ending might come. We've all seen speculating if she's alive or in the background of Breaking Bad. Now I'm thinking with the speech she gave Lalo last season and what Mike said in episode 4 of her being made of sterner stuff, she actually might be scoped out by Lalo when he gets back and he won't want to use Saul, but rather Kim, because he perceives her as more competent as his lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
She would want to do it, but the pressure of the cartel would ultimately, or she wouldn't want to do it, but the pressure of the cartel would ultimately have her give in. This would give her the same reputation as Saul in episode 4, where everyone is distancing themselves from him, and she isn't able to serve as the philanthropist pro bono lawyer who wants to help people. In a lot of ways, that's a more tragic ending for her character, because her central character arc is her wanting to help people and the less privileged. Just a thought. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if she were to be forced to be a friend of the cartel and her reputation was ruined from it, and now mm-hmm. she can't really do her pro bono work or set up her, you know, massive pro bono practice that she wants. And, you know, certainly the donations wouldn't come from like Cliff's friends and stuff right. if that got out. Yeah, that'd be pretty tragic for her.
So where would that put her though? During the course of Breaking Bad?
During Breaking Bad, I don't know. Just
off
the map somewhere. Who knows? Like,
it would in a trailer somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, it would be a tragic end for Kim.
It would be. I agree with that. It is an interesting angle.
Paul writes in and says, hey, during the scene where Kim and Mike meet in the diner, the song playing in the background was catching my interest. It's called Isle of Mystery by Terry Norton. I've put the complete lyrics below if you don't want to, or if you did want to read them all. There are a few ominous lines, though. No fate is worse than mine, and I cried for you today a million miles away, for I'm living on the Isle of Misery. Most of the lyrics could read like a letter from Jimmy in Nebraska. Alternatively, it could read like a letter from Kim in prison, or if you want to get darker, the afterlife. Just to put it out there for discussion, it has a very similar feel to Marty Robbins' El Paso used in Breaking Bad, which was a song that basically encompassed all of Breaking Bad mm-hmm. in its narrative. Yeah, I don't know. Could be. I do know that like they choose their music pretty carefully most of the time.
They do. Yeah.
Whether it's for the feel, just to get the tone of the scene, or mm-hmm. whether it's for lyrical content and narrative support, I guess.
The song at the very beginning of this episode was in German.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you could be onto something there.
Yeah.
All right. Anders writes in, says, regarding it looking as if Gus is living in his house or not, when listening to the Insider podcast, I'm pretty sure they mentioned the guy passing Gus down in the tunnel was supposed to be a body double living in Gus's house to make it look like he's there from the outside. This is like a Home Alone situation. And he's got,
I did see a tweet to this effect before. Yeah.
Of Michael Jordan.
Oh, definitely.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's dancing in the window. No.
He's got a fridge full of Michael's secret stuff.
I did not notice that. So thank you for writing in and telling us that.
Yeah.
And apparently I missed that part of the Insider podcast last week.
I must have too. I think I missed like the last 20 minutes of it.
Oh, right. Yeah. All right. Guy writes in and says, on your last episode, you wondered about Lalo's status during Breaking Bad and concluded that he probably dies before then. I'm not sure about that. In Breaking Bad, Saul is under the impression that Lalo is alive and mistook Walt and Jesse for Lalo's guys when they kidnapped him. Mm-hmm. And that scene had me thinking that not only does Lalo live, but maybe Jimmy ends up helping the DA go after Lalo, and that's why Saul thinks Lalo's after him. Could be that Gus encourages Jimmy to play ball with the DA, making Jimmy both a friend of the cartel and a rat.
Wow.
Could be. Could be. I don't have a ton to add to that.
No, it's an interesting theory, though.
I think a lot of people assume that Lalo lives through this.
I think so, yeah.
I'm certainly kind of in the minority thinking that he'll probably die, but I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know either. I don't have any more information on this than you do, other than, again, the callback of Saul mentioning Lalo
right
in the future.
Yeah, like the only thing.
Yeah, it's like the thread that we're holding on to.
All right, Seb writes in and says, you were talking in the last episode about how Gus's character has been affected by Better Call Saul compared to Breaking Bad. One thing that's always bothered me is the scene where he's talking to Hector about the Kwati that was eating fruit from his tree, so he trapped and tortured it. I get that they were having that to be to show even at a young age he was cool and calculating, but I feel it diminished Hector murdering his partner in Breaking Bad. Like, from Gus's manner in that flashback when they first meet Eladio as the Chicken Brothers, he feels much more timid and less like the Gus we know. I felt that what happened that day changed him and poisoned him over the years. In his desperation to get revenge on Hector, etc., for killing the man he loved, he obviously had a somewhat shady past prior to that with what happened in Chile, but I didn't imagine 6-year-old Gus with a little candy empire at school or anything like that. In Saul, we've generally seen less of him putting on the charm, and his "I don't believe fear to be a good motivator" line rings a bit hollow after everything we've seen him do prior to Breaking Bad as well, as I don't think he internalized that from Mike. I know there's also a lot of talk about how they could possibly have Walt and Jesse show up in Saul considering how much time has passed. Wouldn't really mind too much if the ages don't match perfectly, like Breaking Bad takes place over 2 years and the actors age a lot. Everyone is older in Saul, but one way they could get around it is to have Bryan Cranston in a flashback as his aging is less noticeable, and have Aaron Paul show up separately in post-El Camino Jesse, or as post-El Camino Jesse, so then his age isn't a factor. I do think you're probably right. They've done a little bit of a disservice to Gus overall. It just changes some things, and I'm not sure they all completely line up. Because I feel what you're putting down, but then again, I don't know. Gus is a manipulator. Gus is able to put on a plaster a smile on and do his job almost all the time. Like, I feel like even that's breaking down a little bit now. Where, yeah. You know, his ears start ringing and his spidey sense goes off.
The
and
mask
he walks
is
in
slipping
the parking lot.
For sure.
Yeah, I never felt like that was the case in Breaking Bad until he started dealing with Walt at the very end.
Yeah, and he would drive probably anybody insane.
But I think you're right. I think it's hard to do what they're doing to show a character for this long through 6 seasons of a show and not have that change how you feel about him in the stuff that comes after. But I don't know.
It's all character development, right? Everybody's complicated. We all have things that don't make sense together inside of us.
Oh, totally.
Beliefs that don't necessarily line up together when you put them side by side.
Yeah, a lot of cognitive dissonance, a lot of just like certain circumstances bring things out in people.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not always be, the circumstances might look identical on the surface, but not feel identical to that person. And so they react differently. Mind is a complicated thing.
It is. That is very much an apologist argument.
Yes.
Oh, I'm of course. That. But I don't know. Shit's complicated. There are like little things that I'm willing to let slide when it comes to character development, as long as they don't completely alter the character.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what you have to say maybe in the second half of this season if you get through Breaking Bad between chunks because, yeah, you'll get to see Gus as we knew him.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing I want to see is I want that context again.
Yeah.
I want to have a better understanding of that. And hopefully, I'm going to bring it back into this show. And you guys are going to enjoy hearing it. Or not. Who knows?
We'll see. Yeah. Speaking of seeing, Sai? See? I don't know. Name's Sai. I assume it's Sai.
Yeah.
Says, hey guys, couple of thoughts on this week's episode. Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad before it has taken very few missteps, but two scenes this week are weighing heavy. Oh boy.
Mm.
How would Lalo, who's on bail and presumably on a no-flight list, get to Germany? And with a gun? I'm hoping that will be covered. That's a good question. That's a real good question. I don't know how well-known he is by the authorities. I mean, clearly the American authorities put it together that he's part of the cartel. They know who Lalo Salamanca is when they find out that he's not Guzman.
He's also very much the kind of man who has like six different passports and different names also. So true. That part doesn't mess me up too much. The gun part, though, that is an interesting point. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that till just now. I mean, guns are in Germany too, but...
Yeah, but...
But like, how do you get one?
And right? Where do you get them? Because they're not as prevalent as they are on this side of the pond.
Is there a thriving black market in Germany? There must be.
I'm sure there's at least a black market, but how does he get connected to it?
No, sorry, that's a different country.
Yeah.
I was going to say went to Amsterdam.
Pit stop in Amsterdam, because they're known for their gun bars. That's what they're known
for.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. People pass out on the hillside with guns next to them all the time.
Having done too much guns. Yes. Yeah. Oh, wait, that's
Ganj.
That's
Ganj. Too many shots.
All right, we both had our puns. far more troubling, says Sai, the boxing. That seemed like a gratuitous tick off someone's bucket list.
Nothing is ever
by accident in this universe, and every single scene serves a purpose, but I have no faith in this one, and it would be a screaming anomaly if it doesn't somehow pan out. I really hope I'm wrong. They've earned our trust for sure, but that just seems so out of place. I don't know. Howard's a weird guy. I'm willing to let it slide because we don't know a ton about Howard and this is all his thing. I don't know.
It does feel a little bit left fieldy. It felt a little bit left fieldy when it came up in the episode when we were watching it the first time.
Yeah.
Because we have plenty of reason to think that Howard probably does work out or at least run or something. But I never would have thought like boxing would be his thing.
Yeah.
And obviously this didn't solve anything for anybody. It was literally just, quote, Howard hitting back against Jimmy.
Literally.
In a literal sense before he does it in a legal sense, perhaps.
Well, we've confused another listener as well.
Oh, no.
Dom F. Says, I love your work on covering Better Call Saul. Many enlightening thoughts each week from the show and how it connects to Breaking Bad. I really enjoy it. But your nonchalant reference to Existence, a 23-year-old movie that I watched one night, actually morning, 2 a.m., on HBO 20 years ago, is what motivated me to send this email. How the hell did you two stumble on this bizarre movie? Maybe we're maybe the only people, only three people that have actually watched this movie.
Five. Aaron and Cecily. Cecily introduced it to us.
Yeah.
Bless her. She is the queen of all things weird and horror.
Yes.
And exposing us to it collectively.
If people are wondering what this is, it's a...
Watch it before you read anything about it. You'll probably have more fun.
Yeah, I would say it's a Cronenberg movie about virtual reality. Let's just say that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's just say that. And that's not going to prepare you at all.
I mean, anybody who knows anything about Cronenberg...
But it'll prepare
you
a little.
Can have an idea of what they're in for, but it's very disturbing in a lot of ways.
It's funny. I have seen a lot of monster movies and gross movies, all kinds of things. I have a pretty strong stomach for that stuff, but even I was squirming.
Yeah.
During different parts of that episode, I guess it brushed up against my own queasinesses.
I do recommend it. I wouldn't take the movie super seriously, but it's gross and fun.
And maybe enjoy, maybe partake in some of the devil's lettuce before you start it.
Yes. Yeah. Or the devil's dandruff. Choose your poison.
Sure.
I don't know.
I prefer lettuce personally.
Same here.
A vegetarian.
All right. Maria from upstate New York says, I had some questions. Number one, do you think Jimmy will find out Lalo isn't dead firsthand, or will Kim and Mike be the ones to tell him?
I think it'd be much more dramatic if it's firsthand.
It would, and it would put some tension in that relationship too, because mm-hmm. then Kim might have to admit that she already knew and had been withholding that information because she doesn't think he's strong enough. Like, how honest will she be with him? Like, as to her reasons for not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That could be pretty dramatically interesting. Certainly more interesting than them telling him, I think.
I think so too.
And second question here, the whole fight with Jimmy versus Howie Ham was great, but I have a bad feeling if Jimmy continues shenanigans against Howie, do you feel that Jimmy will continue with this and Kim's whole shenanigans, sorry, with his and Kim's whole shenanigans, or will he feel the need to let up a bit because of this confrontation that happened?
No way, man. I think they are going to hell in a handbasket. I think we are full speed ahead to doom.
Yeah. Jimmy's in a weird place, has been all season, has been during the last half or the last chunk of last season too. But every time I've seen Jimmy feel like someone got the best of him, he digs in.
Yeah.
And he punches back. Not literally like Howard, but he will, I think, get more involved in scamming Howard.
Yeah. Feels even a little bit like it's even a little bit justified. He'll use that. He has been kind of, he's been so in control of his own path for so long.
Yeah.
And in this season, we are seeing a different side of that. He is much less in control.
But we do know that it has to swerve back to Saul Goodman, right?
It does.
At some point before we get to the end of this series,
he's
in
the driver's seat again. Yeah. Of his own. Yeah.
He's got to grab his destiny
by the horns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pilot it to the halls of justice, right? Like, that's got to be the path. So we'll see. All right. David says, I was becoming a little disturbed about Kim's plan to destroy Howard. It didn't seem in keeping with her original character. It felt like it was particularly unkind. Chuck was the villain in most of the show, and Howard comes across as a sort of innocent, which I agree with. But his assumption that the stitch-up was all Jimmy or Saul rather than Kim is a bit sexist. He's very 80s. And the reminder that it was Jimmy who uncovered the Sandpiper case might have brought me around. And frankly, they do need to be getting on with it, as they have elderly clients to whom 30% won't make that much difference, but time makes a lot of difference. I do still feel a bit of sympathy for him. I'm sad to say Kim's a goner, by the way. It feels like they're building up to that. Kim and Jimmy are a classic tragic couple. P.S. Lalo is such a scumbag, but I love him. Also a goner. Yeah, I think Lalo's almost certainly dead. I have always felt this for Howard. I have always felt like Howard got a raw deal because mm-hmm. He was stuck between a rock and a kind place. He was stuck between Chuck, who was this asshole to his brother for their entire lives, maybe for good reasons, maybe for terrible reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But then Howard was stuck with him, right? It's his partner in a business. He can't really buck him too much.
Right.
And certainly not for this mailroom kid who's like, I think he respects him and mm-hmm. he would have given him more a chance than Chuck did. But I've always felt that Howard Hamlin has gotten a raw deal from Jimmy.
From Jimmy, for sure. Absolutely. I do. I think I have said this a few times, but earlier in the series, Howard was a little bit more dickish to Kim.
A little bit of
sexism there, for sure.
Hmm.
100%.
Yeah.
But that said, doesn't feel like he deserves the shit that's about to fall on him.
No. This ultimate takedown? Yeah, this is a... I don't know. This is the Howard Hamlin that they are taking down is a monster they've built up in their own heads.
I think so, yeah.
And the real Howard Hamlin is nothing like this. There might be a crumb of what they're mm-hmm. fighting in that man, but...
He mostly just looks like a douchebag.
Yeah.
But he's... Yeah. In his heart, he's at least
he's
trying.
He's kind of fake and like...
Yeah.
But that doesn't deserve to be smashed with bowling balls and have your reputation and career ruined.
Probably not.
No.
People should be able to dress how they want.
Right? Even if it is ridiculous.
And speak how they want, even if it is ridiculous. The way he speaks really was very off-putting to me.
Oh, yeah.
When I was first watching Better Call Saul, it made me dislike him. It's too controlled. It feels fake just because it's so controlled, when actually he's probably just measuring his words very carefully.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a pro lawyer.
No, he's very good at what he does. It's just what he does is a little off-putting.
Yeah.
Which is true of Jimmy, too, right? Like, both of those guys are just different sides of the same coin in some ways.
Only one that you'd probably want to have a beer with, though.
Absolutely. Mike. I might take a 16-year Macallan, though, from the other one.
All right, yeah.
Anyway,
I like it.
Norm writes in, says, what are the chances the Werner's wife.
Werner's wife. Just go with it. Just go with it.
Werner's wife is alive.
Is alive.
If Lala went in the night before. Oh, okay. So you're saying if when she invited him in, he went in, would she still be alive? I'm guessing the odds are around 1% she's not dead. What do you think about that? You think she gets him to come in and she's dead?
It depends on how hard he's trying to cover his tracks in Germany.
Yeah.
But also he's Lalo and he's prone to acting out.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Goes and I don't know. Probably just shoots her and then burns the house to the ground, I assume. Give her a travel wire.
Yeah, of course. That is kind of his MO.
Yeah. And that private eye pretty much gives Mr. Ward's survival chances a similar percentage. The detective is going to piece something together and make it so Howard has to get offed. More guilt on the conscience for Jimmy to repress. You think Howard could die before this is over?
Oh, I hadn't considered that.
I guess. I mean, if he's going at Jimmy and Lalo finds, or, you know, we talked about like some of the links between this PI and the cartel and Gus and
all the different people following all the other cartel. People. Yeah.
Yeah. It's possible. He's certainly mixed up in more than he realizes.
I feel like I could see a scenario in which he got caught in the crossfire, whether literally or figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
I could believe it.
All right, Anil writes in and says, did you notice that in the episode when Kim wakes up, it's 3:17
and that upside down is lie?
You beat him to it, yes.
I read about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
But I didn't either.
He attached a photo to it, and yes, sure enough, 3:17, upside down. Put it on your calculator, watches right now.
8:00:05. 8:00:07:03:55.
Sorry. Oh, right. 5:53:07:08:00:08.
Yeah.
Okay.
Had to do a little Mind Palace thing there, but we got there.
7:07:34.
Hell. I'm good at this. Let's move on.
All right, Scotty, we're going to start a lawyer boxing match just like they did in the episode. Because Scotty writes in to say, I'm not disagreeing with the other lawyers who've written in, but... Saul's more exposed than they've suggested. There are two things happening. One is the attorney-client privilege, and the other is Saul's progressional obligations. As to the privilege, the writer who commented on the crime-fraud exception is correct, and that the privilege does not apply if the attorney services are being used to further a crime or fraud. Note that the lawyer doesn't need to know about the nefarious intent for this to break the privilege. It's the client's privilege, and the client forfeits it by using the attorney services to commit a crime or fraud. So they wouldn't even have to know. Hmm. It's related but not the same as Saul's professional obligations as an officer of the court. He knew his client was Salamanca, not de Guzman, and he misrepresented it to the court. If they can prove he knew, not only is his knowledge of Lalo's real identity not privileged, but he's probably going to get disbarred as a repeat ethics violator. Contrary to popular beliefs, lawyers can't lie to courts. All right. So we're throwing out that out there, just as a big old hand grenade to the other two lawyers who wrote in last time. And I want to save all this law stuff for the end because I know some people are not super keen on it. I'm interested, though. And we have Doug L., who is one of our resident lawyers here.
Longtime
resident
lawyer.
Yep. Writes in as the final email, says, just a few minor observations on this week's episode. We see Aaron and Howard speaking to the Sandpiper residents about the status of their lawsuit, and they're concerned about why things are taking so long. The lawsuit was filed sometime in season one in approximately summer 2002, according to online wikis about the show's timeline. Assuming those sources are reliable, this week's episode takes place in approximately June 2004. In my experience, 2 years is not abnormally long for a lawsuit to still be going on, especially a class action lawsuit. It is, however, fairly deep into the process for Aaron to be explaining basic concepts like discovery, which should have been well underway 2 years in. Further, Howard mentions that they are pushing for their first mediation session. It's difficult to tell if this is an abnormal, if this is abnormal or not this far into the case. Class actions tend to go a lot slower than individual cases. So while often mediations would have happened sooner than this, I can't say that what is going on with Sandpiper is outside the norm, at least not without knowing the kinds of details about the case the show hasn't and likely won't get into. Still, this supports my earlier thoughts that the case is old enough that settlement or trial cannot be too far off in the distance. It still does not make sense for Jimmy and Kim to take the risks they are taking if all they have to do is wait for the case to end, especially since there is no indication that they are desperate for cash. Most likely, the Sandpiper settlement or trial is no more than 12 months away. Perhaps their true end goal is something other than Hamlin's humiliation or the settlement, but we'll have to wait and see. I also wanted to note that one of the residents points out that they're concerned they will literally die before they see the money from the case. Mm-hmm. In California, where I practice, there's a mechanism whereby a person can ask a court to move up a trial date where there is concern that the plaintiff won't live long enough to have their day in court. I do not know, however, if New Mexico has a similar provision, and if so, how it would apply in a class action context. If you have any questions, as always, I'm happy to look into it. All the best. Thanks, Doug L. So we get to learn a little bit more about timelines on this case. And, you know, this is definitely something that the writers think about when they do this stuff. So I'm sure they have consulted with other lawyers as well. To try and figure out, okay, whereabouts would we be on this case,
right, given
how much time we know has passed.
I'll say for my part, the two-year time span didn't feel huge to me either, especially, again, for a class action lawsuit, because so many people are involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's just much information to have to pour
discovery
through.
Discovery process takes forever with something like that, because there are probably reams and reams of stuff to look through. And
half of it was pieced together by two idiot brothers in the dark.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That would be shredded and reassembled.
Yes.
Nice. So that's it for the feedback this week. Again, thank you to everybody who sent in messages. We will, of course, be back for what I assume is going to be the Walt and Jesse and Howard takedown episode. I don't know how those things are going to come together, but...
And Howard takedown all in one episode? Oh,
yeah.
Dang.
I mean, not total takedown, but like something
more
big, moving
progress,
the ball on that thing.
Yeah.
And they have been moving the ball on it. I don't want to say they haven't.
No, but they were like, it's like when you're playing golf and your shit lands super close to the hole and you go to hit it again, but it ends up 4 inches away from the hole and you're like, son of a bitch, god damn it. I'm never playing golf again. That was almost how I felt this week's episode. So I'm very ready for the ball to go in the hole.
Me too. So hopefully all balls and all holes next week. But yeah, we'll be back for another podcast then. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
See ya.
Bye.